RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Fun Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums.
And me, Beans, and you really are on the drums today, aren't you?
Tonight, it's going to be a good, sweaty evening in New York, yes.
You know, let's talk about this real quick before we get into what we're going to do today on the show. You released with your band, I guess you would call it a single, correct?
Yep. Yes, and yes.
It is amazing. Like, I love this song. I've been listening to it.
This one, Tickle Me Pink, it really, I laid down the drum tracks for this one back in December. I've been really itching for this to finally just get ready to go out there because I wanted people to hear it because I think that the lyrics are great. It doesn't really lean one way or another. I think everybody can digest it in their own little ways, and we got a really awesome lyric video done, and lot of fun. I think that this is going to be the new approach for the band. Just make singles, attach it to really interesting lyric videos, and just create a new type of, way of disseminating content. Because the old way of recording a demo or an EP or an LP, and it's just not there anymore. It's not there anymore. So just want to get in on the content creation aspect of things, and I'm glad you liked it.
I did. I liked it a lot, and I liked the video a lot, and I think it's great. And you know, I also think it's awesome that it's not a super heavy metal song. You know what I mean? Like, so it appeals to like different people. So it's not, you know, if people like metal, then, you know, people who don't like it just don't like it. This is more of like a middle of the road sort of a sound.
It's got a little bit more of an industrial edge to it. And it definitely is heavy as piss, but it's heavy in a different way. Mm-hmm. You can get real heavy. I mean, the Beatles got really heavy in some parts of their songs. You don't need the crazy gain and all the distortion to do it too. You can just, there's different ways of creating that atmosphere of heavy. So I'm glad you liked it.
You did great. You did great. We'll put a link to, I'll put a link
later
to the, yeah.
In like a week or so when it's actually on the band's YouTube.
Cool. I'll do that. And so Frank, listen, this is the deal. I'm sitting here last night. I didn't watch the first Dem debate. Because I'm here and I don't want to be miserable. So I was just reading people's live threads of them and the clips, and the Carpe Donctum video was hysterical. And, you know, we were just kind of doing it that way. But last night I saw Shem had a live thread. Dilly had a live thread. So like at 10 o'clock at night, I just threw it on just to hear the insanity. And I thought to myself this morning as I was listening to the beginning of it, we should spend the show today just dissecting this debate because it is so full of gold for us to talk about that I just figured that's what we'd do today on the show.
I would really appreciate it because I've seen quite a bit myself. I didn't watch the first night either, but last night I did watch some stuff that came out, and man, if this was the A-team, they've got a problem. but aside from that, it's just the subject matter. So I would, yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah. And you know, we'll stop between these 30-second snippets of these guys and talk about what we think and our perceptions of things. And if this isn't your kind of show, I'm sorry, but this just has to be done. So off we go. We're going to start at the very beginning and we're going to go for as long as it takes us to get through. And just to say, the NBC News has this up on YouTube. There are 2.1 million views. There are 21,000 likes and 27,000 dislikes, just to give you an idea of the ratio on this debate.
Yeah. And before I say anything else there, too, do you have anything on there? Of course, might be, because it was one of the biggest parts there where everybody raised their hand in favor of health care for illegal immigrants.
Yes.
Okay. This is unbelievable, especially with what's going on with the census. And we will, I guess that'll open up the door to talk about a little bit what happened yesterday with the Supreme Court. So let's
Did you read the opinion? Because I know you're heavy on that stuff.
I
Did they
I have
write
not,
an opinion?
No.
They didn't make a decision. I mean, they didn't make a decision. They just said we need more information before we can make a decision.
That's the thing. He called it pretextual. Whatever the hell that is, or it was contrived, the reason that he said. But Tracy, let's just start off with that, because this is going to filter into what was going on in the debates last night. Here is you want to see the propaganda that's been built into this. I went to law.com. All right. And here is the headline: justices blocking citizenship question on census call Trump's push contrived. And I want you to listen to just the first two sentences of how this is being covered. And you tell me where this makes no sense. The Trump administration's push to add a citizenship question on the 2020 census hit a roadblock on Thursday when a divided U.S. Supreme Court partially upheld a ruling in favor of challengers who argue that the move being wanting to know how many citizens are living within the borders of your nation, that the move would cause a substantial undercount of Hispanics and other minorities and benefit Republicans in election districts across the country.
Oh, so they're basically saying that Democrats want the illegals to vote.
What they're saying, and not only that, but they're also saying that Hispanics and other minorities are largely not citizens.
Well, go there because my brain doesn't work that way. But yes, okay.
But think about how presumptive that is. You know, to say that we're going to have an undercount of Hispanics and this is going to benefit Republicans, that makes it purely political.
Yeah.
To say that, because why would an American who has a Hispanic background, as maybe their family comes from somewhere in South and Central America a generation or three ago or whatever the hell it is, just like my family, your family, whether it be Italy or anywhere else. But just think about the propaganda that is put into this, all because of the fight against something that is so common sense that you would want to be able to take account of, yeah, how many bodies are within your borders. But also, if you're going to commit constantly, no matter if you're Republican or Democrat, if you're going to commit to this idea that the federal government is going to be a provider of services for everybody that lives here from cradle to grave, then wouldn't you at least want to, for accounting purposes alone, know how many people are eligible for those services? And even right now in California, they even said that they need to be able to take an estimated account of how many illegal immigrants are living there, because they want to be able to create in-state programs for health care. Well, how the hell is California going to do it without asking citizenship questions?
It doesn't make any sense. It's just a purely, like, if you want to look at the politics of the matter, it's not coming from the Republican side, to be quite honest.
It's all votes.
Yeah, it's gross.
They want to know citizenship questions in California because they know that it's going to be a safely blue state no matter what.
Yeah, they don't have to worry about it, but they need the information to be able to push through their, you know, figure out how much money they need to rape and pillage from the other people to hand over to the people that don't deserve it, right?
Absolutely.
Well, that's a good way to start it off, because some of this stuff is so absurd. You'll see. Here we go.
Okay, what's the first one?
We're going to start with Bernie, okay?
Oh, boy.
All right.
To you. You've called for big new government benefits like universal health care and free college. In a recent interview, you said you suspected that Americans would be, quote, delighted to pay more taxes for things like that. My question to you is, will taxes go up for the middle class in a Sanders administration? And if so, how do you sell that to voters?
Okay. Well, you're quite right. We have a new vision for America. And at a time when we have three people in this country owning more wealth than the bottom half of America, while 500,000 people are sleeping out on the streets today, we think it is time for change, real change. And by that, I mean that healthcare, in my view, is a human right. And we have got to pass a Medicare for all single-payer system. Under that system,
hold on.
Vast majority of the people in this country will be paying significantly less for health care than they are right now.
I'm going to stop it for a second. Basically, he's not answering the question, and he's going to continue to not answer the question.
They can't answer the
question. Well, he will answer it, though. He will answer the question, and he will be honest about it. But basically, he goes right into healthcare, and I'm sitting there like, what does this have to do with the question, which was, will the middle class pay more? And what three people are supporting all the tax money for the rest of the, like, three people? That's it?
You know, I don't know about Bernie Sanders, but I am middle class, maybe lower middle class. I don't know where the hell I even fall. But I don't ever think about these people that are supposedly so rich that I am where I am in my life because they are so rich. It doesn't make any sense to real people who are not who are out there just living their lives.
Meanwhile, not for nothing, but I mean, he's standing up there preaching about this crap. Well, he's one of those high level income people. He's got
only thing is he's not a master of industry. He's a master of regulating other people's industries. And that's how he makes his money. He's a grifter. All these commies are.
They are. Let's finish with Bernie.
Oh, wait, one more thing.
Hold on. OK, sorry.
The 500,000 people in the streets. Then why the hell are you raising your hand to keep the borders open and give the rest of the third world health care? When we have 500,000 people of our own in the streets, you want to bring in the people from the streets from elsewhere right now?
Yeah. Nobody. See, this is the thing that the questions for the most part are good questions, to be honest. The problem,
but there's no follow ups and there's nobody hosting.
There's no time for anybody to challenge anyone. And none of them want to, like, for the most. You'll see. Yeah. You know what's really crazy too? This author, what's her name? I don't even know her name. And the other thing, all these people were tweeting live during the debate while they're up there on stage. I'm like, you people have just all told us that you don't run your own Twitter accounts and nothing that you say is coming out of your mouth. So basically there's this author woman. She's a little bit crazy. I don't even know her name. She just got up there somehow. But she had some really interesting ideas, and so did Yang. I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. Education is the future for this country. And that is why I believe that we must make public colleges and universities tuition free and eliminate student debt. And we do that by placing a tax on Wall Street.
Hold on, it gets better.
The proposal that I have brought forth is fully paid for.
Senator Sanders, I'll give you 10 seconds just to answer the very direct question. Will you raise taxes for the middle class in a Sanders administration?
People who have health care under Medicare for All will have no premiums, no deductibles, no co-payments, out-of-pocket expenses. Yes, they will pay more in taxes, but less in health care.
And here's the other thing. We have all these crazy commies out there trying to one-up each other with this whole, we need to forgive the $1.6 trillion of student debt that exists. Well, they don't ever tell anybody that $1.6 trillion in student loan debt is all privately held debt that would only just be transferred to the public sector. It's not making anything free. They're just taking it off the backs of individuals and just loading it onto everybody else, which is still going to be recouped through taxes. And if you're the type that doesn't pay taxes, then, oh man, then you have somebody to vote for, don't you?
Yeah, well, not only that, but let's quickly talk about how college got to be so expensive in the first place. And it is one word. And the word is government. And I talk about this a lot because people don't realize it. Why is government so expensive? Why is college so expensive? Well, it's so expensive because the government got in the business of issuing grants and, you know, basically pressuring independent financial institutions after they got out of the business of doing the loans themselves to loan unlimited amounts of money to 17-year-old children who have no means to pay it back. It's like if a 16-year-old were to walk into a car dealership and say, I want that Maserati over there. Give me a lease and a loan for $80,000, $100,000 for the car. They would be laughed out of the car dealership. But they give this money out to teenagers like it's candy because the government basically forces it. And they give the Pell Grants and they give the Block Grants and everything else that you can get. And so the student, the colleges know they can jack up their tuition as much as they need to Because it's never going to be a case of, you know, the guaranteed money out there all the time for people to pay for school. So basically this free college thing, it's very easy. Just introduce competition back into college and college tuition and make them compete for students rather than guaranteeing and ushering in of people, and we'll be good.
I will add two things to what you just said. And the first thing is, it was, I believe it was MSN or CBS just this year, I mean, just this week, that went and noted that two-thirds of college graduates, I forgot going back to when, two-thirds of recent college graduates who have been out of school for, I don't know, maybe 5 or 10 years, all regret their degrees. All regret their degrees. That's number one I want to put on out there. So, A, it is not necessary for people to go to college. Number two, what you said about the analogy of allowing a child to go into a Maserati dealership and have the government guarantee that he can walk out with that car, that's a great analogy. But I would actually change it a little bit. It's as if a teenager can walk into a dealership and buy a Volkswagen Beetle at the price of a Maserati. Because when they get out of college, they're not driving a Maserati. They are driving the Beetle, and they can't pay it back.
That's great. I will accept the tinkering.
Done. The degrees are useless.
Well, I mean, when you're getting a degree in, like, you know, what the word that wants to come out of my mouth, I won't say, but basically people are getting degrees in, like, you know, body part, you know,
East Asian lesbian jazz dancing.
Exactly. Oh, Lord. We've talked about college a lot, and I think we're good there. Let's keep going. This is good. We're probably not going to get through much, but this is fun.
This is how bad it is.
It is. It's horrible.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Biden, promise everybody's going to get in here.
I promise.
Vice President Biden, Senator Sanders, as you know, has been calling for a revolution. Recently, in remarks to a group of wealthy donors, as you were speaking about the problem of income inequality in this country, you said, we shouldn't, quote, demonize the rich. You said, nobody has to be punished. No one's standard of living would change. Nothing would fundamentally change. What did you mean by that?
What I meant by that is, look, Donald Trump thinks Wall Street built America. Ordinary middle-class Americans built America. My dad used to have an expression. He said, Joe, a job is about a lot more than a paycheck. It's about your dignity. It's about respect. It's being able to look your kid in the eye and say everything's going to be okay. Too many people who are in the middle class and poor have had the bottom fall out under this proposal. What I'm saying is that we've got to be straightforward. We have to make sure we understand that to return dignity to the middle class, they have to have insurance.
What dignity have we lost?
And what bottom has fallen out?
I know.
I don't want to. You would think that they're presiding, like, there's Hoovervilles popping up all over the country.
The only place the Hoovervilles are popping up are in L.A., New York City.
Yes, the tent cities in San Francisco. I mean, what are they talking about? And Tracy, you see this where you and I can't get through 15-second clips without having a 15-minute discussion. How reductive they are with these really complex issues, and they just make it seem like, I don't know, a switch needs to be flipped in the opposite direction and magically something happens. They don't take market forces into account. They don't take just what's going on right now in reality in the headlines. You know, I mean, their own media, their own friendly media can't deny what's going on in the economy right now, what's going on in these liberal cities. I don't understand.
The problem is that they're starting from a false premise.
Yeah.
Like, they're starting from some made up fantasy they have in their heads, and they're working backwards from it. Here, let's listen to the rest of Biden.
That is covered and they can afford it. They have to make sure that we are in a situation where there's continuing education and they're able to pay for it. And they have to make sure that they're able to breathe air that is clean and they have water that they can drink. Look, Donald Trump has put us in a horrible situation. We do have enormous income inequality. And the one thing I agree on is we can make massive cuts in the $1.6 trillion in tax loopholes out there. And I would be going about eliminating Donald Trump's tax cuts for the wealthy.
Vice President Biden, thank you. Senator Kerry.
I have a couple of loopholes I'd like to close. I would like to close the hundreds of billions of dollars that are being spent on people who don't actually belong to the country legally. That'd be great. That's happening on state levels, and of course, it's all federally funded through the middleman. That is these federal block grants that need to be cut off. There's lots of money. There's hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars that are being spent around the world on countries that are not states in the union. You want to talk about loopholes? But they want to make sure that Americans don't skip out on giving a portion of what they earn to the government. That's the loophole they want to close. They don't want to close the loopholes that gives Americans hard-earned money and loans, taking out loans on future generations of Americans so that they can go and cater to people who don't belong here.
The best part of it, too, Frank, is that like later on, depending on where we get to, they start talking about goodness, we'll just wait. We'll just wait. Hold on a second. Hold on.
Loopholes.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move right along here.
There's a lot of talk in this primary about new government benefits, such as student loan cancellation, free college, health care, and more. Do you think that Democrats have a responsibility to explain how they will pay for every proposal they make along those lines?
Well, no. Let me tell you something. I hear that question, but where was that question when the Republicans and Donald Trump passed a tax bill that benefits the top 1% and the biggest corporations in this country, contributing at least a $1 trillion to the debt of America, which middle-class families will pay for one way or another?
Okay, so all of a sudden, she cares about the national debt.
Yeah, and I love how, once again, false premise. The host asks, how are you going to pay for these trillions and trillions of dollars worth of new government programs and benefits? And then Camel Joe's sister says, I would like to know why Donald Trump gave anybody any more of their own money back. It's like, what do you know? No. So we are not getting anybody that got a tax cut, no matter what bracket they were in. Anybody who got a tax cut did not get anything on somebody that came out of somebody else's pocket. They kept what they already made.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, and that's the difference. It's like, you know, these people start from the premise that the government owns your income. And that you're giving, you know what I mean? It's a benefit to you to be able to keep it.
It's an allowance. And not only that, but then they go into the whole idea that, well, if we keep cutting and the debt, of course, the national debt is going to keep ballooning, because that's the other premise. We could never, ever consider that we're spending too much. We can never stop spending.
Not only that, but out of one side of her mouth, she's going to be advocating for, you know, basically no borders and social welfare programs for every single person who decides to step their pinky toe over the border while she's saying this. And it's like, people with brains have to understand that. People with brains, this has probably been the most beneficial this exercise for Walkaway that ever could possibly exist. Like, nothing Walkaway could do would outdo this.
And everybody in there is getting their orders to start clapping.
Oh yeah, of course.
The raucous applause that comes up when people say things that are so mindless. And actually, sometimes they say things that don't even have a point, but they just deliver it in a way where it's like, oh, wow, that was a mic drop moment, right? Did she just drop the mic? Okay.
The only person who doesn't get any applause when he wants it is freaking Swalwell.
that's because he needs his diaper change.
Oh, my gosh, that guy. Okay, hold on. Here we go. We're going to keep going.
Working families need support and need to be lifted up. And frankly, this economy is not working for working people. For too long, the rules have been written in the favor of the people who have the most and not in favor of the people who work the most, which is why I am proposing that we change the tax code. So for every family that is making less than $100,000 a year, they will receive a tax credit that they can collect up to $500 a month, which will make all the difference between those families being able to get through the end of the month with dignity and with support or not. And on day one, I will repeal that tax bill that benefits the top 1% and the biggest corporations of America.
Number, those corporations that have now been coming back to the United States and that are seeing that the taxes that they were paying, those exorbitant over 30% taxes that were being paid, are no longer there. They're down to 15%. They're hiring more. That means that the working class are getting more opportunities to work. So why would you ever repeal tax credits that make it possible for people to create jobs? Well, yeah, well, go cut taxes for the middle class even more if you want. Get off their backs.
I'm going to say something here that's going to be very apparent. Kamala Harris, or whatever her name is, she is literally an authoritarian, because she doesn't have the power to repeal that bill on day one by the swipe of a pen, as though she can't do that. She can't do that. It needs to go through. You can't just repeal a bill as president.
First of all, when she gets, if Democrats think that they're going to take the White House in 2020, and not only take the White House, but keep or expand their majority in the House and then take the Senate as well. They're out of their minds.
It's not happening.
As long as there's one House that is controlled by the opposite party, there's nothing Kamala Harris can do about the tax cuts.
Not only that, but like she says a gazillion times throughout these debates how she's going to use executive order to nullify the Second Amendment.
Yeah, we should nullify her with executive order.
I wish we could. Let's have Trump write one up right now. I mean, she not only that, but later on, because I don't think we'll get there, she actually, she was attorney general in California. She insults, the way she says, basically, she says every police officer is a racist. She was the attorney general. She's disgusting. And she's gross. And then she had some zinger line. Americans don't want a food fight. They want to know what we're going to put food on their table.
Well, people can only have food fights if there's enough food to throw around.
Not if Bernie Sanders gets his way.
Yeah, then everybody will have a ration card fight.
You know,
everybody will be able to throw their ration cards at somebody.
You know what's funny too is that like Bernie Sanders throughout this entire debate, like Carpe did another funny video this morning, because Biden, he almost hits Biden in the face with that damn hand. He's always pointing at you. He's always yelling at you and pointing in your face with that hand, with that right hand of his.
This is his last chance though, Tracy. He's been waiting for his commie day to shine. He's been waiting for the sun to shine on his commie heart for a long time, and he's been waiting a long time, and here he is, and he knows that he is an old codger and he has nothing left, and he is going to throw those hands around and he's going to drool all over the stage and he's not going to leave any stone unturned.
You know who does a really good Bernie Sanders impression?
Who?
Bongino.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Listen, before we go on, let's take a quick break real quick, because we have to thank our sponsor. Our sponsor is Nutsack.
Nutsack.
Nutsack. Nutsack is an amazing, amazing satchel, so to speak. And they are manufactured in America. They're American-made bags. They make high-quality bags using American wax canvas, something the Democrats would never approve of.
Nope.
American full-grain leather that the Democrats would rather have imported from, I don't know, Canada. And American labor, which the Democrats would rather hand over to illegal immigrants.
Or Morocco.
And nowadays, I think you guys, and even women, have too many things to carry. They've got wallets, flashlights, sunglasses, knives.
Vibrators.
Men? Is this something new?
Oh, I thought you... We were talking about guys?
Oh.
I'm sure there's guys with vibrators. I have a funny story about an airport I can talk about, but forget about that.
Please do. No. I mean, if you've got something that has to do with your nutsack in an airport, go ahead.
Oh, it wasn't about the nutsack. Although the next time I go to an airport, all of my electronics that need to have protection is going to be in the nutsack. But never mind. It's completely unrelated.
You know who would benefit from a nutsack bag?
Who?
Just everybody out there. Go to YouTube and type in and I ooh. You'll see.
How do you even spell it?
O-O-O. And I ooh.
Okay.
You'll get it. They got their name because they were told that they were nuts. to manufacture in America. And they have been supporting this show for several, you know, they're a supporter of the show. They're great people. You guys definitely, definitely please support our sponsors. Seriously, they do so much for us. And they're offering our listeners $5 off their first purchase, which is money that you could be using to buy yourself a lot of beer to listen to these Democrat debates. To receive your $5 discount, visit nutsack.com. That's NUTSAC.com. And please don't add the K at the end, because you never know where that'll bring you.
Well, if it's on Google, they'll probably block it, so it doesn't matter.
Chinese Google?
You type anything into Google, and it'll bring you to like the Clinton Foundation donation page.
Use the promo code DARKTOLIGHT at checkout. Make sure you support Nutsack. They're beautiful people. I love them so much, and we're so glad that they're here helping our show. Perfect. Nutsack bags.
Nutsack. Great people.
They're great people.
They are. I really enjoyed this spot.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be supporting us. They're great. Okay, back to Camel, or whatever we're calling her today. Hold on.
You in on this. You've warned that Democrats will lose in 2020 if they embrace socialism, as you put it. You were booed at the California Democratic Convention when you said that. Only one candidate on this stage, Senator Sanders, identifies himself as a Democratic socialist. What are the policies or positions of your opponents that you think are veering towards socialism?
Well, I think that the bottom line is, if we don't clearly define that we are not socialists, the Republicans are going to come at us every way they can and call us socialists. And if you look at the Green New Deal, which I admire the sense of urgency and how important it is to do climate change, I'm a scientist, but we can't promise every American a government job. If you want to get universal health care coverage, I believe that health care is a right and not a privilege, but you can't expect to eliminate private insurance for 180 million people, many of whom don't want to give it up. In Colorado, we brought businesses and nonprofits together. We got near universal health care coverage. We were the first state in America to bring the environmental community and the oil and gas industry to aggressively address methane emissions. And we were also the first place to expand reproductive rights on a scale basis, and we reduced teen pregnancy by 54%. We've done the big progressive things that people said couldn't be done. I've done what pretty much everyone else up here is still talking about doing.
Now, thank you, Hickenlooper, for saying those. I mean, I don't mind teen pregnancy decreasing 54%. That seems a really good way to stop abortion, no?
Much of that decrease was probably through abortion.
Oh, so he doesn't mean like implementing programs to stop them from having sex.
Reproductive right? What are you of course. Every last one of those teens has the right to reproduce or not reproduce. So it's always about how do we take care of this situation? That's it. I mean, they all know how to go to CVS and pick up a package of condoms. They all know that they can go on birth control before they're 18. They don't even need their parents' consent anymore.
No, they don't. But
I mean, come on.
I mean, do you at least. The thing about this answer that got me was like, I don't know if he was saying, because like I did this thread last night, Frank, and I basically said like, under the Obama administration, Obama was smart enough to know that America wouldn't accept his socialist policies. So he lied to us about them and then passed them anyway. Like you need to, you know, pass the bill to see what's in it, right? These people are not lying to anybody anymore. They're like so out of their minds. They're just telling people that they're socialist, communist, Marxist crazies.
Well, because they used to be held in check. They used to float around the same nucleus with a very subservient Republican Party. And now that they're dealing with somebody that they can't control, like Donald Trump, they can't lie anymore. They actually need to create some kind of differential. And unfortunately, that means that they just have to take their masks off. For Hickenlooper to stand there and say that we have to be very profound in the way that we say that we're not socialist – but stand by universal health care and wealth redistribution and taxing of private corporations and buying votes with it and keeping the borders open. And what are you talking about? How can you say that you can be staunchly you're not socialist? And what the hell does democratic socialism evolution mean? I mean,
there's no such thing as democratic socialism.
It's coercion with a democratic hint of it.
Democracy is still mob rule. So there's still going to be 49% of the people that are ridiculously pissed off in democracy, which is why we don't have one. Anyway, I was wondering your opinion and what you thought about him. Like, is he saying we need to be lying about our socialist bent? Or does he mean we're not socialists?
No.
I think you've answered that.
They need to keep it under wraps. They need to go back to the old way of learning how to be very. But the acting is so bad now.
There's no acting.
The acting is just so bad right now.
They're frantic.
I just wish that more people like Hickenlooper would just keep running for local. I wish that Bernie Sanders would keep his greasy nose stuck up Vermont's ass and try to all do this and show us, wow, we've created a paradise here in Colorado. We've created a paradise over here in Vermont. Come live in Vermont. It works. Just take that pride in your state. Why the hell do you need to force yourself on everybody? If it's a good idea, it's going to work. You're not going to need to sell it. You're not going to need to lie about it. You're not going to need to find new ways of describing it so that you don't have to talk about the nuts and bolts of what you're proposing. Just use the Constitution. The Constitution is actually very friendly towards socialists. You just can only do it on a local level.
Yeah. State rights. Ready?
Yep.
Governor, thank you. Senator Sanders, I'll give you a chance to weigh in here. What is your response to those who say nominating a socialist would reelect Donald Trump?
Well, I think the response is that the polls, last poll I saw, had us 10 points ahead of Donald Trump because the American people understand that Trump is a phony, that Trump is a pathological liar and a racist, and that he lied to the American people during his campaign.
Oh.
He said he was going to stand up for working families. Well, President Trump, you're not standing up for working families when you try to throw 32 million people off the health care that they have, and that 83% of your tax benefits go to the top 1%.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there. Donald Trump is probably the first person to run a presidential campaign where he didn't lie to us once. He has upheld nearly every single campaign promise he campaigned on. And the only things that he didn't uphold are the things that these idiots stopped him from upholding. Number two, in my opinion, are you still there?
And members of his own party, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Number two, he's saying that Donald Trump wants to take away health care from 32 million Americans when that's exactly what Bernie Sanders is campaigning on. Taking health care away from Americans to go on a government Medicare for all plan that would literally close down every single hospital in this country in a matter of weeks.
Not only that, but he's talking about 30 million Americans that would lose their health insurance or whatever. But he wants to take health care that people have chosen away from over 100 million.
Yeah. Yeah. He wants to eliminate private insurance completely, outlaw it, make it completely illegal and put all of it in the government's dole. And he's also said on the record at the same rates that Medicare pays out now, or Medicaid. I'm sorry. I don't know which one it is. Whatever. At the same rates they pay out right now. Which would bankrupt all of the hospitals. And you know, all these people in this debate, they start making these insurance companies out to be the bad guys. And not for nothing. Well, there's a lot to be said for big pharma and all this, which the author lady with the crazy voice has talked about in here, which is one of the things that raised my eyebrows. There's a lot to be said for that. But these insurance companies are forced to insure people that are so ill that they can't recoup the costs of paying out, and the hospitals are raising their, for a bag of saline, it's like several thousand dollars because they're trying to recoup the money they're not getting from the Medicaid. It's a cluster. I'm sorry. It's just a cluster.
And not only that, but I'll tell you one thing here, too. When you have a culture that is so gross socially when it comes to image and all these narratives about fat shaming and body positivity, this is a top reason why I oppose paying for other people's health care. Most people eat, drink, or smoke themselves to death in this country, and it's not my responsibility to subsidize their lifestyle.
You know, you're right. And it's funny because we were talking about this the other day, like just sitting at the pool, like looking at everybody. And I'm like, we talked about this on Wednesday. I said the same thing. And, you know, I'm not the healthiest person either. I have my own vices. Everybody does, right? I'm not in the pinnacle of health, but I don't expect someone else to pay for me for my mistakes. I really don't. Anyway.
We're getting more and more unhealthy in this. You know, you want to talk about Big Pharma. You want to talk about the business of managing symptoms. That's what we're in.
Yes.
And nobody's ever talking about health.
You're right. And it's funny that you say that, because this woman, I'm going to look at Twitter real quick. And I retweeted her last night. This is what this author said. And it really struck me as a, like, you know, it was a good thing to say. Marianne Williamson is her name. She basically, you know, she blathered incoherently for the first like 15 seconds of her answer. And then she said, rather than, you know, talking about universal healthcare and all this, why, we don't have a healthcare industry. We have a sick industry. And she said exactly what you just said. Why? She goes, why are we not focusing on what's causing all this autoimmune disease in this country? Why are we not focusing on diet and healthcare and fitness? She basically made your point. We're treating symptoms and we're not figuring out, you know, we're not focusing on why people are getting sick. And I thought that that was a really good answer. I'm sorry. I really did. Anyway, that's why she won't get anywhere.
You know, there are fragments of candidates that if you actually take them out of people and put them together, you might have maybe a half of a good candidate.
Yeah, like Tulsi Gabbard's foreign policy.
Tulsi Gabbard's foreign policy, and of course, she has pretty healthy views on free speech as well. Marianne Williamson talking about the real problem with healthcare, that it's never really about health.
Yep.
And it we're just the regulation, it's just unbelievable. So, you know, you take those three points and you put them into a Democrat. Or perhaps a Democrat who says, hey, listen, socialism, whatever the hell it is, fine. Let's fix Social Security and let's also start campaigning. And as president, I will do this. I'll start fireside chats to teach people about the ways that we can actually help and experiment with more grassroots funded ways of taking care of the needy in society on state levels. Let's bring education back to how we can do this without bringing everybody along for the ride who doesn't want to do that, creating resentment and division in the country. That would become a really interesting Democratic candidate.
It would. And even some of, you know, Yang is a tech guru. He's got some really interesting ideas as well. And I like listening to these ideas. Like, I think that if we had more substance, you know, I don't care if people are Democrats, like in the traditional sense of the word. I think it's healthy for the country to have those differing ideas, but not when they're extremists like most of these people are. Like, we need real people with real good ideas. None of these people have that. Like, it's like you just said, let's keep going.
That's how we beat Trump. We expose him for the fraud that he is.
Here we go. Because Gillibrand hasn't gotten any time and she's getting frustrated.
Wait, this is my forte here. Here comes the big bad woman now, Rear.
Oh my, she is so annoying, Frank. I can't. Like, she does not stop. She's rude. She's overbearing. She's not that bright. She's nasty.
She's connected to NXIVM in more ways than one.
I mean, her dad basically was a lobbyist for a sex cult that trafficked in minor children. I mean, you know, the things go on and on. But let's hear her blather on about how, oh, what a two-face. Okay, hold on. Here we go.
Perspectives. The debate we're having in our party right now is confusing because the truth is there's a big difference between capitalism on the one hand and greed on the other. And so all the things that we're trying to change is when companies care more about profits when they do about people. So if you're talking about ending gun violence, it's the greed of the NRA and the the gun manufacturers that make any progress impossible. It's the greed of the insurance companies and the drug companies when we want to try to get health care as a right and not a privilege. So there need not be disagreement in the party, because in truth, we want healthy capitalism. We don't want corrupted capitalism.
Thank you. I
want
to be fair to all the candidates.
Thank you.
Senator Ben.
Okay. Can I just say something?
Yeah. That's why you're here.
For her to say first of all, capitalism is not a perfect system, but it's the best thing that we could ever get, knowing our condition as human beings. It is a system that allows self-interest to drive individuals to go and negotiate wages on their behalf, take up work that they believe is worthy for them, barter however the hell they want, and engage freely in an open market for whatever the hell it is. And they will make decisions based on numerous personal situations that you can never account for, ever account for. And then she moves on to give examples of greed. The NRA and the gun manufacturer. Well, the NRA is pretty much a lobby for people who believe in the Second Amendment of the Bill of Rights. They don't make any guns.
This is like a constant thing, Frank. Everybody on the stage, basically, at one point or another, says something about the NRA, they don't even know what the NRA does.
It's a trigger word for everybody. They get an applause. Oh, they're going after the NRA. They're brave. And then they go after the gun manufacturers. Well, the gun manufacturers, they manufacture tools. That's just pretty much what it is. If you want to go after people who kill people, if you want to go out and blame gun manufacturers for being the prime example of greed over people, then what about Little Debbie Cakes? What about Little Debbie?
Yeah, they're making people fat.
Little Debbie has given millions of people diabetes.
It's horrible. They need to be stopped, Frank, immediately. They need to be stopped.
We need to go after NRA, and we need to go after Little Debbie. Because people are fat and they can't stop eating it. The cosmic brownies are too good.
You know what? Honestly, we really need to go after the people that make the forks.
The forks? What's
yeah,
that?
Because if people don't have forks to eat with.
Oh, yes.
Then they won't be able to eat the Little Debbie, and then they won't get fat.
I've never eaten a Little Debbie with a fork, but I understand what you're saying.
Moving right along. I wish this show was 2 hours today, because this is fun.
Yeah.
Just saying. All right.
You have said, quote, it's possible to write policy proposals that have no basis in reality. You might as well call them candy. Were you referring to any candidate or proposal in particular when you said that?
Was that directed to me?
Yes, that was your quote.
That sounded like me. Thank you.
It was you.
I appreciate it. First of all, I agree completely with Bernie about what the fundamental challenge we're facing as a country is. 40 years of no economic growth for 90% of the American people, 160,000 families in the top 0.1% have the same wealth as the bottom 90%, and we've got the worst income inequality that we've had in 100 years. Where I disagree is on his solution on Medicare for all. You know, I have proposed getting to universal health care, which we need to do. It is a right. Healthcare is a right. We need to get to universal health care. I believe the way to do that is by finishing the work we started with Obamacare and creating a public option that every family and every person in America can make a choice for their family about whether they want a public option, which for them would be like having Medicare for all, or whether they want to keep their private insurance. I believe we will get there much more quickly if we do that. Bernie mentioned that the taxes that we would have to pay because of those taxes, Vermont rejected Medicare for all.
Oh, here we go with the cluster.
Care at length, Senator, but for the moment, my colleague
wants to
continue the question.
I wrote the part in Senator Sanders' bill.
There's Gillibrand.
That is the transition, which merges what the two senators said.
Senator.
Because the truth is, if you have a buy-in over a 4 or 5 year period, you move us to single payer more quickly.
Senator, we will get to this. We will get to this. I want to say hello and good evening, not just to Mayor Buttigieg.
Buenas noches, gracias de invitarnos.
Gusto verlo, caballero.
Many
of your colleagues on stage support free college. You do not. Why not?
Sure. College affordability is...
I gotta stop there because it's like...
Why not? Why not?
I can't.
Anybody out there, did anybody mention during this debate that we have almost 6 million people who are no longer on food stamps under the president? Under
no, we haven't presidency? Heard a bit about food stamps because they want people on food stamps.
What about the fact that we have jobs surplus right now? We have over 1 million or 2 million, however many open jobs right now.
Open jobs? Oh my gosh! You know, it's I wish I had the timestamp where Kamala Harris talks about how it's almost like she took a page of the AOC playbook. She says more Americans are working, but they're working 2 and 3 jobs.
That used to be great. My grandparents, they loved working the multiple jobs. They saved.
Yep.
They thought that was a mark of, wow, look at, I mean.
Listen, I'm a proponent of work smarter, not harder, right? So I have definitely in my life had, at one point I had 3 jobs. I worked my butt off to do some of the things I needed to do. And I think that everybody should be able to do that. But the using that as some kind of an excuse for like minimum wage increase or like, you know what I'm saying? This is what they're doing.
Well, the other thing there, too, is that that it's buried. The devil's in the details, as Maxine Waters would say. The devil's in the details in that one, too. That, you know, under the Obama administration, most of the jobs that were created were part time because especially because of his administration and this healthcare. Democrat Party's ideas about healthcare and all of the mandates that it put on just local businesses, that if you had full-time workers, you are now mandated, if they worked more than 40 hours a week, to go out and give them full-on health benefits. That may that sounds like it's a really good thing to do. You want everybody to have health benefits, but what if that cuts into the way that a small business owner is actually able to provide working hours for people?
Yeah.
So it created a class of workers known as the 39 and a halfers, where people actually have to cobble together their work weeks between full part-time jobs to be able to create full-time pay, because they're destroying people's abilities to create good jobs.
Somebody out there who's probably listening to this show that I've had a private conversation with about healthcare will recognize themselves right now. But they said basically for their small company, they're paying out like almost $60,000 out of the, you know, for healthcare for their employees in a company of like 5 or 6. Think about that.
That's what, a month or a year?
I'm not sure. It's crazy. It's a very small company who is full-time employees that have to pay out the health care premiums, and it's like basically bankrupting them because it's so expensive.
And think about this, those employees, if there was competition in the healthcare market, in insurance markets and healthcare collectives, and you had doctors that are creating more private practices where they deal directly with people in their communities and all that stuff we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, if you had that kind of a system that was bubbling up, then that $60,000 your friend is paying could go into creating 2 new positions at the job. To create 2 new employment positions or 1 new employment position at the job. And then they can all go out there and negotiate for whatever plans are best with whatever money they're earning at the job. Instead, they burden the employer. They burden the employer with a decision that should be very private for the employee to go out there and negotiate on their own behalf. And they just don't see it, but they want to have their fingers in every pie, because if they control everything, then everything becomes a human right and it becomes a voting issue.
I want to get this author woman who I already forget, Michelle Williamson, is that her name? And I want to also get Andrew Yang in here before we end the show. And I think Swalwell is about to say something, but I don't really care about what he says. He's out of his mind. At one point in the debate, he said, we need to get weapons out of the hands, or let me read it. Hold on. Let me just read it really quickly because I quoted it on my page. He said, quote, hold on. Swalwell just said we can take, quote, the most dangerous weapons from the most dangerous people when talking about removing guns from law-abiding citizens. So he basically said that every American citizen who owns a gun under the Second Amendment is dangerous. He's gross. All right, let's see where we're at here.
least $15 an hour.
Jose, I've got $100,000 in student loan debt myself.
Let me get to you. You can't count
on the people who've been in government for the last 30 years who were around when this problem was created to be the ones to solve it. It's going to be the next generation, the 40 million of us who can't start a family, can't take a good idea and start a business.
Yeah, start a family. You're killing kids.
Buy our first home.
I know. That's what he cares about. Oh,
you're killing kids.
They're killing kids. Yeah.
Reproductive justice. Then like, we can't start a family.
I've never heard a Democrat. I mean, the Democrats don't talk about family anymore. And I can't believe that Swalwell went there because really, like.
Well, if it's the next generation that's going to help us, then why don't you all go home and let's wait for the next generation to come up? How about that? Since it's not going to be you guys and you're just bridging the gap to a generation that's going to have a better idea than you, then why are we going to go with a mediocre idea, you stupid constipated prick?
I believe
in the children.
Swalwell is, I just don't even know what to say about him. He's horrible. He's horrible. So is the two people I hate the most. Well, I can't really do that because I hate them all. I would say Kamala Harris, Swalwell, and Gillibrand, I have the most personal disdain for. And then after that comes in a Sanders, because his ideas are just evil. All right. Let's listen to Andrew Yang, the tech guy who is like never going to get anywhere. But I just want you to hear what he says. Hold on. Because he's Chinese, I think, or Japanese. I'm not sure what he is. But they only ask him questions where he has to do math. It's. I swear, I'm not kidding. Here.
Mr. Yang, what is the square root of 15?
Because it's true. But he's intelligent. The dude is intelligent. Here.
Adult in the United States.
Created to be the one. This is the generation that's going to be able to.
Adult in the United States. $1,000 a month. No questions asked.
That's right.
I think that's like $3.2 trillion a year. How would you do that?
Sorry?
How would you do that?
Oh, so it's difficult to do if you have companies like Amazon, trillion-dollar tech companies, paying literally zero in taxes while they're closing 30% of our stores. Now, we need to put the American people in position to benefit from all these innovations in other parts of the economy. And if we had a value-added tax at even half the European level, it would generate over $800 billion in new revenue, which combined with the money in our hands, it would be the trickle-up economy from our people, families, and communities up. We would spend the money and it would circulate through our regional economies and neighborhoods, creating millions of jobs, making our families stronger and healthier. We'd save money on things like incarceration, homelessness services, emergency room health care. And just the value gains from having a stronger, healthier, mentally healthier population would increase GDP by $700 billion. This is the move that we have to make, particularly as technology is now automating away millions of American jobs. It's why Donald Trump is our president today, that we automated away 4 million manufacturing jobs in Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And we're about to do the same thing to millions of retail jobs, call center jobs, fast food jobs, truck driving jobs, and on through the economy.
Mr. Ray, if I get you understand a little bit better, so you're saying $1,000 a month for everyone over 18, but a value-added tax, so you can spend that $1,000 on value-added tax?
What?
Well, the value-added tax would end up... You'd still be increasing the buying power of the bottom 94% of Americans. You have to spend a lot of money for a mild value-added tax to eat up $12,000 a year per individual. So for the average family with two or three adults, it'd be $24,000 to $36,000 a year.
Okay, Congressman...
If they did that, they wouldn't need the $1,000 per person over 18.
Well, Tracy, this is why these are the types of conversations that if you drop in on and you listen to, it would make people think, oh, wow, I can never get into politics. I can never get into government. You have listen to all these numbers, all of these ideas, people, this and that, a tax on this, a rebate on that. Let's move a little bit of funds over here. This is not all we're listening to right now is micromanaging nonsense. Get off our backs. Stop planning our futures. Leave us alone. Lift the taxes. You want to see ground up, trickle up economies. Leave us alone.
Yeah. At least he's got a brain in his head, though, unlike many of
you. You can tell that he's doing a lot of calculations and he's working things out and he's very tuned in as far as where the numbers add up and where it doesn't. But aside from that, I know that at least 75% of the people who are listening to this podcast right now did not know what the hell they were talking about. was confused.
It was a little confusing, but I mean, at least listen. This is what I gathered from him. He's talking about local communities sustaining itself and trying to figure out a way to change the fact that jobs are being automated, and they will be, and how to replace the automation. You know, people are going to lose their jobs because things are being, like, he's at least forward thinking enough to see what's happening in the future. Not that I support him. I'm just saying, like, you know, you've got a forward thinking person here who's got actual real data to back up what he's saying, as opposed to these other, like, talking head nonsense losers who are just throwing out platitudes about everything being free.
He also acknowledged that it's the reason why Donald Trump got elected without being, you know, without throwing around ad hominems about racism and stuff like that. He actually acknowledged the reason why how Donald Trump diagnosed a real economic problem and exploited it for his benefit. And he did so rightly.
Yeah.
So good on him for at least doing that and not taking the cheap route like Bernie Sanders, the this and that, well, phony racist.
Bigot. We're going to end with this woman that I talked to you about. I cannot remember her name. This is so freaking wrong.
Williamson?
Williamson. I don't know why I have a hard time with this. Okay, we're going to end the show with this clip. We'll talk about it, and then we'll say goodbye until Monday. Are you ready?
Yep.
Ms. Williamson, this is a question for you. Excuse me. I'm addressing the question, Ms. Williamson. We've been talking a lot about access to health insurance, but for many Americans, their most pressing concern is the high cost of health care. How would you lower the cost of prescription drugs?
Well, first of all, the government should never have made the deal with the big pharma that they couldn't negotiate. That was just part of the regular corruption by which multinational corporations have their way with us. You know, I want to say that while I agree with, I'm with Senator Bennett and others, but I agree with almost everything here. I'll tell you one thing. It's really nice if we've got all these plans, but if you think we're going to beat Donald Trump by just having all these plans, you've got another thing coming. Because he didn't win by saying he had a plan. He won by simply saying, make America great again. We've got to get deeper than just these superficial fixes, as important as they are. Even if we're just talking about the superficial fixes, ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a health care system in the United States. We have a sickness care system in the United States. We just wait till somebody gets sick, and then we talk about who's going to pay for the treatment and how they're going to be treated. What we need to talk about is why so many Americans have unnecessary chronic illnesses, so many more compared to other countries. And that gets back into not just big pharma, not just health insurance companies. It has to do with chemical policies. It has to do with environmental policies. It has to do with food policies. It has to do with drug policies. It has to do with environmental policies.
Senator Bennett, a question.
So she's an incoherent babbling mess, but then all of a sudden it's like the light bulb goes on and she starts talking about why Americans get sick.
And then they have to throw out the hook.
Have to cut her off when she starts talking about the fact that we're being poisoned through our food. Have to cut her off when she starts talking about the fact that they're spraying. You know what I'm saying? She piqued my interest a couple times, but she's a mess. She really is. I'm sorry. She's a little bit of a mess. And that voice, she sounds like she's from the 1940s and she's got like a cigarette stick in her hand.
Well, she's done her thing. She has really, really done it.
Can you disagree with the second, like the very last part of what she's saying? I can't.
No, not at all. I can't disagree with what you're saying about where the real healthcare problem is. No, not at all. I have friends, and these are, I'm talking about friends who voted for Trump. That they have awful, awful habits, awful eating habits, awful smoking and drinking habits. And as long as they get a doctor to say, all right, well, your blood looks all right, they keep going. And if they get diabetes, they'll shoot up the insulin and they'll keep going because they'll think that the medication is going to allow them to keep their lifestyles up. Nobody is living right.
No.
And of course, you can't be judgmental. You'll be ableist. You'll be a fat shamer, a body shamer. You're going to be a sexist. You'll be an ist over here. You'll be phobic of something else. You can't talk about humanity. You can't talk about the human condition anymore because everything has been so weaponized. And that's why we are where we are.
I want to end off the show by just saying one thing that I've like a constant thread, and we only got through about half an hour of this debate, believe it or not. But a constant thread throughout is like prescription drug prices. I want to say like Trump has done a lot on prescription drug prices, right to try, and the healthcare industry as a whole. So I cannot wait to see, Frank, whoever this ends up being after this field of 27 lunatics gets narrowed down to the one, the debates between President Trump and whoever it is, because I think it'll be a knock 'em out of the park. Ridiculous. There's nobody here that is, I just don't see a candidate here that stacks up to progress.
Oh, absolutely. No. It's not. It's all regressive. There are flashes of a good idea that pop up here and there. And like I said, in a couple of different places prior to today's podcast, Tracy, these debates are going to provide many more memes than memories. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And,
absolutely.
Yeah. And hats off to Carpe Donctum. He has been blessed by the president lately.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Good job, Carpe. We love you. Anyway, well, listen, you guys have been listening to the Dark Delight podcast with
Frankie Val on the drums.
Good luck tonight on that gig. And Beans, brought to you by Nutsack Bags. Please make sure you go check out Nutsack at nutsack.com and use the code DARKDELIGHT for $5 off your Nutsack bag. And you guys can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com. See you Monday.
Later.
This is a Jim Fannin Show quick fix on Radio Influence.
What is the world's most influential symbol? What is it? Is it the cross? What's the world's most influential symbol? Is it the dollar sign? There's one symbol spoken, written, seen, heard, and used every day of your life. We take it for granted. What precedes this symbol can change your life. Every religion uses this symbol. It's showcased in every language, and it doesn't matter if you're broke and poor or you're a billionaire. You're still going to use this symbol. I've used this symbol to lead clients to places they never thought they could go. This symbol has helped them set personal, world records. Going from good to great, well, it requires this renowned sign. In fact, as you're listening to this right now, it's being used millions of times right now around the globe. So what is this symbol that has the power to change so many lives? What's the most powerful symbol that influences every person on earth? What symbol helps the lost find hope? What symbol helps you become more successful? It's the question mark. The question mark symbol. This simple character, it makes you think, doesn't it? By communicating with the question, you can guide the listener or the reader to a place they might not normally go. So, what'd you do yesterday? And immediately, whoever I'm speaking to, they'll look up to their left. And I know that I've taken them into the past because that's where their memory's housed. So, what are you going to do tomorrow? And they rub their chin because they haven't made a definitive decision. They're pondering, but they look up to the right to create what tomorrow might bring. The question and the question mark are at the forefront of influencing everybody you meet, every individual, every team, every group. Are you really aware of the power that you possess with this symbol?
The Jim Fannin Show can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.